put me out. I wanna be one of your work fires, baby. Make you forget about everything else. Hey, you know it when you feel it.
Hey everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's First Friday Toast to the Arts and Parks Show with the National Parks Arts Foundation. Y'all know we love them. The National Parks Arts Foundation has these amazing artists in residencies where you artists, whether it's a musician, a potter, a painter, a photographer, a filmmaker, let me see, poet, writer, you know, whatever you do in the arts, right? Apply for these residencies. These opportunities are incredible. Because not only do you get to go to a national park unit, I mean, they also open to other parks, right? Not just national parks, but you get to be there for a full month. And like a lot of us think about, imagine that, even if you own a business or no matter what you do in your professional world, a month to just actually decompress, create, and produce, and actually have that downtime where you can learn new skills, be in a different setting, that really inspires your creativity. And that's what they do. And so they have these programs in places like Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, which we're going to talk about today, Dry Tortugas National Park out in the Florida Keys, where an artist can go with a partner because you're really on your own island off grid, which is amazing. And you get to create for a month. There's places like Chaco Canyon up in northern New Mexico. There's Fort Union, again, in northern New Mexico, but then you're in the rugged prairie with a fort, which has got so much history, like Civil War history, Santa Fe Historic Trail history, like the list goes on. So I encourage you to go to nationalparksartsfoundation.org to check it out. But today we want to welcome Shark Heart. Shark Heart is Lara Ruggles, and she is joining us. She is actually from Tucson. You know, Nancy and I are from Tucson. That's our home base, but we're not really from anywhere. We've lived everywhere. That's what it feels like. But that's where our storage unit and our friends who are like our family, where they live and where we are based. But we travel full time, and we're so excited to connect with a fellow Tucsonian who is now in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and she's there right now. So welcome. How are you, Lara?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
That was a big introduction to the Parks Arts Fund, National Parks Arts Foundation, right? But it is really amazing. And I know that you also work in the nonprofit world, right? Yeah. So when you saw what they're doing from the nonprofit side, tell me like from the nonprofit side, then the artist side, what you thought about it.
Sure. Well, I'll switch that order if you don't mind, because
go ahead.
When I first found out about the National Parks Arts Foundation and these residencies, I was kind of working a bunch of gig jobs. I wasn't in nonprofit world at that time. Oh. I was like touring regularly and, you know, coming back and delivering for like Postmates or Amazon or whatever, you know, wherever I could pick up shifts, when I was home. And, I had a professor in college who, and she's a really wonderful author, Melanie Bishop, who did residencies regularly when I was in college and talked about residencies and recommended that all of her students apply for residencies. And she was the person who originally sent me information about the National Parks Arts Foundation and the Chaco Culture residency in particular. And then when I started looking into it and saw the Hawaii Volcanoes National Park residency, I was like, oh my God, like it's really ideally set up for a musician with like the vocal recording booth and the electric piano that's in the house. And so had my eye on
it. I didn't know they had that. I didn't know they had the piano in there. I knew there was a recording booth, but I didn't know that the piano was there.
Yeah, oh, there's this this beautiful white electric piano that looks like a baby grand. I've been playing a lot on that. And so I started applying for this residency gosh, must have been in 2018 or so, like pre-pandemic. Wow. Yeah. I joked that I was going to spend the whole stipend on application fees before I got it, but that I was just going to keep applying, you know, because it's been a dream of mine. Since I was in college and since I found out that residencies were a thing, it's been a dream of mine to do a residency like this. And this one in particular is just ideal in so many ways for what I create.
I just want to go back to what you say. I know, yeah. I want you to continue on that, but when you said residencies were a thing, that's actually an interesting thing. So I want to touch on that now or later. It's a thing, because I want artists that are up and coming, or maybe like you said, didn't understand they're a thing. What is the thing? Not the crazy movie from way back when.
Or the signs you see on the highway. No.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Near New Mexico. Exactly. The thing. Yep. It's coming. The thing. Well, 5 more miles.
My professor has done like residencies at UCross in Wyoming and residencies at other places as well. And there's places all over the country besides the National Parks Arts Foundation that host residencies and offer like living accommodations. And in some cases, stipends to artists for a certain amount of time. And the whole idea is like, take some time away from your life, like take some time to really get into the creative process and not have to be distracted by other work obligations and really create new work and focus on creating new work. And like, it's just such a dream to be able to do that, because how often do you get to step back from all of the other obligations that you have in life? And I've noticed that as someone who works a full-time job, I'm able to continue creating music. I continue playing shows. I continue recording and releasing songs. But what really stops for me when I'm working full time is the songwriting. Like I can't sink in to the kind of like slowed down time that I need to be able to access in order to get to the writing of a song.
That's important, because your lyrics are brilliant and you're singing.
Oh, thank you so
and
much.
Music. No, I really like, I was listening and I'm like, oh, I'm like, why didn't I know you when I was in Tucson, you know?
Yeah.
But we had our head, but this is the thing, we had to go on the road to actually snap us out of the work sphere, right? Mm-hmm. And so exactly what you're talking about, we're on the road full time just to force us to keep doing our tour. Otherwise, you just keep putting it off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of actually didn't do much of Tucson while we were in Tucson. Like, that's kind of sounds stupid, but that's exactly Gemma. But getting into your music, your lyrics are so, you make us stop and think and feel. And I think that's really brilliant. And the fact that you can do it so easily with the melodies, it's like, it's already catchy. You're already in. And it's like, okay, I just kept listening. I don't even know what song, what, where. I just kept listening. So I got stuck on everything on Bandcamp, on YouTube and everything. Everyone go to sharkheart.com, and that's shark with 2 K's and heart with 2 T's. So sharkheart.com, and we'll talk about the name later. But that's something, like, I think you're really right about, you know, having that breakaway. I mean, we know it as writing for, you know, with our magazines and everything. It's like, you actually need this time out to actually do a good job, to create. We can keep producing and doing all this production side, like the showmanship side and all of that. But to actually think and create the lyrics that you create, which I think are phenomenal. How do you get to that point where it actually is going to hit home for the person listening?
Well, I feel like pretty reliably, like if I try to sit down at my piano and just like write something in the middle of like a busy work week, nothing comes out. Like the words just are not there. I can fiddle around on the piano. I can play some chords. I might be able to get to something that like feels interesting musically, but like the words are just not there. But pretty reliably, if I take a couple of days away from home in like a natural setting and I go out on a hike and I find a place to sit, and it's like my second or third day away from like life responsibilities, if I just sit out in nature with a notebook and like put the pen to paper, things happen. Like it, like things just come through. I've had a couple of experiences. But pre-December, I hadn't written a song in like 2 years. I worked so hard throughout the pandemic and ended up in a new job. Like
I saw you on videos, you know, trying to raise funds for the Rialto Theater and your nonprofit that you're working with there and all this, like that. It's so funny because most people are like, we didn't do anything. We just baked a whole bunch and drank a whole bunch of wine. And then like, you're like, we kept going. You kept working. Yeah. So then and I have friends like that. We're like, the pandemic burned us out and now everybody's back to work. We're like, oh, shut up.
Yeah. I definitely found that my coping mechanism for the pandemic and for like suddenly, you know, I worked at a music venue when the pandemic started and I was taking time away from the music venue to go on tours with Andrea Gibson, who's an incredible, incredible poet. And all of the touring got canceled. And then suddenly all the shows at the venue where I worked got canceled. And that like, I had nothing to do except for try and keep the entire music industry alive. So I just really dove into the advocacy effort with the National Independent Venue Association to get federal funding allocated specifically for live entertainment venues, knowing that, you know, live music and comedy venues were in such a different position than any other business of like not really having a way forward, you know, like we weren't food businesses that could suddenly become mobile.
Right. But from what I learned, you kicked major butt with that. Didn't you get like like the largest public funding?
Yeah, like, it ended up being a $16 billion bill that was passed in Congress, which is the largest public rescue of the arts in U.S. history.
You go,
so
girl.
That was, yeah.
Holy
yeah,
cow.
But it was an incredible national effort with like so many venue owners and promoters and booking agents as well. Like so many folks throughout the music industry working together to put pressure on legislators and make it happen and tell the stories of what was happening in these venues.
But so when you do something like that, your energy is you're beating the drum literally, right? Nonstop. Yeah. And you can't let one person go off of it, right?
No.
You can't, it's like
everything goes into that effort. Yep.
So you understand politics now more than probably most of us in regards to voting and getting someone elected or taken down.
Well, and honestly, like politics is not that different from like building any kind of relationship or like booking shows. Like, it's kind of a game of just putting yourself in front of someone enough times that suddenly your name is familiar to them and they feel like they know you, even if you're the person that continues to show up, you know, and no one else is making that introduction.
I think showing
you.
Up is one of the most underrated like skills in life is show
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely.
You to get the residency, right? You said, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah. And it sounds simple, but it takes a lot of energy to show up. It takes emotional resources and it takes, you know, physical resources that you have to be in a place where you can take that day off work, you know, to show up at the rally or to show up at, you know, a meeting with a legislator. Like it takes resources. And I think that that's what maybe people don't realize.
And having to be like, while you're working your ass off, like turn around and be able to be fresh face, like, hi, like meantime, like, can you just sign this already? Can you just do it already? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you still have to be like, yay, I want to do this and make it happen. But you go through all this. And meantime, so you understand it. I mean, during the pandemic, we did so many podcasts. I mean, that's what thrust us into being like a three-week show. Mm-hmm. We used to be a weekly show. And then now we're daily plus.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And the pandemic and I mean, our audience has stayed and grown from it. So like the pandemic sucks because people died and people were sick, but
honestly
through that, you know, people were like, oh, we've got time to listen. They still do. Thank you, audience. Really. And, it was tiring. Like Nancy and I were like, oh my gosh. And we're still kind of balancing it all out because it's been super hectic with all of it, right? Sure. But at the same time, balancing your music. So during that time, did anything go through your head about going through this busyness and standing up for something as an activist to write about, write music? Did any songs come from this for you? Or are they still working in you?
I think the songs, like I really was not writing anything throughout that period because I was just throwing everything that I had into that effort. And then
really no time for reflecting.
Like, really not really, that much.
That's 100% then more.
Yeah. But like since about December, I've been writing again. I took like a little 5-day retreat for myself in December. And like I've had a couple experiences since December where, you know, I've ended up out in nature with a notebook and just,
ooh, where did you go?
A complete song is ready to just come right through. And I went to Joshua Tree.
Oh yeah. That's our old hometown too.
In December.
We went from Joshua Tree to Saguaro Park basically.
Nice.
That's our homes. Yeah. Oh, awesome. Yeah. So Joshua Tree will do that to you. There's something
there. It had
to
be somewhere I could get to, like in the half day's driving.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really wonderful. And more recently, just a couple days ago, I was just sitting out at the estuary by Whittington Beach Park here in Hawaii, which is just such a beautiful place. Like I was there for an hour and a half, and I think I watched like 6 or 7 sea turtles swim by.
I saw that on your Instagram, and everyone, you've got to follow her on Instagram because your videos, and then you're doing reels with your music that are amazing.
Oh, thank you. And
so I was watching that with the turtles and going, oh, I want to okay. Going to the ocean from being in Saguaro National Park area, like the desert area, even Joshua Tree, I always say it's ocean. It's the ancient sea was there, right? Because you know, there's shark teeth, there's everything. So do you feel a connection there?
I love the ocean. I was born in Virginia and I grew up going to Virginia Beach and Nag's Head in North Carolina and the whole Outer Banks area. And I grew up swimming in the ocean. My mom was on swim team. And so she and my dad taught us how to be like really strong swimmers and do all the strokes. Every time I get in the water, I still do a few strokes of butterfly in her honor. That was her stroke in college. And
wow, that's hard. I remember trying to do that. You could go down if you don't get your legs back up.
It is a tough stroke. Yeah. It takes a lot of energy. I can't do more than like 25 yards of it in a stretch. I couldn't do a full 50.
I don't know if I can do 3.
And I think she did 200.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot. But yeah, so I love the ocean. I'm very careful of it. Because Yeah. I know no matter how much I love it and no matter how strong of a swimmer I am, like the ocean can do things that I cannot control. So I don't, you know, I don't go into the water in like areas that are like, this is not a great area to swim. Be a really strong swimmer if you're going to swim here. Like,
no,
because I know that I am, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, it'll suck you in. It'll suck you in. I grew up in the ocean too. And like in South Africa. And if you do, it'll either suck you in or a great white will take you down.
You know? So right.
You learn pretty quickly when your friends from high school come in with no arm. So like, yeah.
God.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, it's true, but isn't that humbling? And I would think Hawaii is kind of humbling with this, the whole, I think you should.
I mean, everything is lava.
Lava tubes. Everything
is lava.
Yeah. And that's kind of humbling in not kind of, it's got to be, I haven't been there, but I've been to volcanoes and stuff, but like seeing, I mean, I don't, it's amazing to me how life comes after it, but you had a lava tube that was where a tree had been or something. And I'm looking at this going like, holy cow, this is humbling. The ocean is humbling. The ocean, and you obviously understand that humbling experience of nature, but to connect with her, to be able to tap in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tapping in is good. So going to the beach there, you know, and then going to lava tubes.
Yep.
Like, do you want to play the tuba into the lava tubes? I'm just saying, like, I just gotta, like, come on. Somebody has to blow something into the tube.
I know.
You should.
That would be fun.
It. Are you allowed to?
I don't play any wind instruments or horns.
Well, sing into it. Sing into the
that's
tube.
That's true. See what
you could record
back.
It and see what it sounds like.
Okay, I'll try that next time I'm there.
Like, seriously, like that would be interesting. As like,
I have been taking a recorder around with me, not like the recorder, the instrument, but like a little handheld pocket recorder, and recording some of the sounds that I'm hearing while I'm here. Because I use a lot of samples in my music, and so just trying to get little snippets of things that I might be able to use later in a song. I was by Rainbow Falls outside Hilo last week, and I was in this tree that where like this bird was singing so loudly and so clearly. Like, I've never heard a bird song that close up and that loud and clear before, and it just kept happening over and over. So I got a recording of that, and I'm hoping I can find a way to use that in a song before too long.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I was reading about your performance art and how you loop and actually connect with the audience. And I know you've done shows, and by the time this airs, you would have done another one in Hawaii, and you've got more coming up in the Southwest when you get home. But tell us about that, the looping experience, and how you involve the audience, and take us through that journey of what you're doing, because, you know, there's bands, and then I have some friends. I don't know. Do you know Ryan David Orr? Like, out of Northern. Oh my God. You both played at the Tucson Folk Festival. I'm going to connect you. So, but you know, he does the looping thing too. And he had to walk us through it. Like, we didn't know, like, how are you doing this? And how are you doing the samples? Because the samples are kind of interesting. And I think that is we do so many music interviews and musicians that are doing experimental electronic music. And I was talking to Nancy the other day. I said, I think this is the wave of the, you know, 2020s on is experimental electronic music, but it's not just taking, like, there's hip hop and rap that are using samples from old songs. I'm talking about, like, I don't know if it's just us doing a bunch of interviews with a bunch of musicians doing this, but taking music from nature or recording sounds that are everyday, whether it's a cityscape or something, and incorporating it into their music. Because, you know, so I feel like that's the new wave of electronic wave.
Sure. Well, there's music. So much you can do with it. And there's so many ways that you can manipulate a single sound electronically. Like one of the sounds that's in one of that's in my song This Will Hurt on my most recent album is it's just a marble that my friend and I dropped on a TV table. And when he manipulated it and changed some pitches and amplified certain things and took down other frequencies, it ended up sounding like actual thunder. And so we put that in a song. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Because How to Love Your video, you guys had like a little marble thing going on in there. Like you had a something on the street.
There was
I'm talking?
It was a ring.
Oh, it was a ring. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was a proposal.
That was a trippy song. You guys, like, you know, it's like, oh, I want to make this work. And then, boom.
I have a really heightened, like, fear of losing things that I love. And so I think that comes out in the songs that I write. Like, I can't just write, like, a... Well, it's hard to just write like an unabashed love song because that love comes with fear in equal measure. And it's impossible not to, for that not to make it into the song as well.
Wow. Because it's so interesting because you're so headstrong and you're getting people to commit to things and fundraising for nonprofits and fundraising and, hey, sign for this bill. And then, hey, I want to do Hawaii Volcanoes National Park residency. I'm going to keep going. But isn't fear actually fuel?
I think it definitely can be. I think there's ways to exist with it that are healthy. And there's ways to exist with it that are really like not integrated and that really kind of... keep you from the things that you'd actually like to be doing. And it's, you can't just ignore it and like expect that it's not going to influence your life in negative ways. But there's like a working with it that has to happen.
As an artist, isn't it important to have all those feelings too?
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes it easier to be an artist because there's constant material, you know, there's never anything that happens in your life that you don't have some feeling about and that you don't, you know, feel like you need to process in some way. And maybe so for longer than, I don't know. I feel like I'm a slow processor, and that's why I need music in my life, because it's really hard for me to work my way through something without kind of looking at it from every angle through a song.
Yeah, I understand. It's like, it's kind of a balance. You have to go through the different layers to get to the nugget of the cake, you know? The king cake. You got to find the baby in the cake. But now going back to the sampling.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of this interesting thing where it allows the freedom to be from the fear. Because it's, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, this is the reality of it. I'm going to stretch it and mess with it. Yeah, it's kind of a weird balance of stuff.
I have an interesting relationship with it. I started working with samples and building songs in Ableton because I had been touring with a band. And then one of the folks in the band was my boyfriend at the time. And we broke up. And then the band kind of fell apart at the same time. And
been there.
I was back in a situation where I was like playing solo again. And I missed the fullness of the band sound. And I wanted to be able to do things with my solo performances that sounded a little bit fuller and that built more sounds around the basic like guitar and vocal or piano and vocal. And so I started building arrangements with samples kind of in order to be able to loop vocals.
Yeah.
In Ableton, like looping vocals was the goal. And then I needed the samples to give me the tempo to stay locked into in order to loop the vocals in Ableton in particular. And so what I do with samples is usually fairly simple and straightforward. And usually I'm working out of like a lot of the kind of starter packs that that come with Ableton or that you can download for free when you have the software. I don't do as much like creative manipulation as a lot of folks out there, because really the samples are like I try to find a sound that's already close to what I'm looking for. And the samples are more of a vehicle to be able to loop mm-hmm. the vocals and like build those sort of richer layered vocal arrangements.
I want to back up a little bit because people aren't hearing what we're talking. You know, like they're not hearing the sounds. Like when you're in a show, you can explain that part. Mm-hmm. So when you're sampling, you're creating the beat. And so when you see someone performing, they go, here, I've created the beat. And then it goes boom, 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 right? And then, hey, I'm adding this in. And then you'll start adding like this and it'll build. Mm-hmm. And during the show, you can remove, right? You can remove something at a point and stop and slow. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you could record a whole new song right on the spot even.
Yeah.
That's a little like old.
No, there's definitely artists
I'd be nervous about that.
Can do that.
I'd be a little nervous, but you know, but like even can you, you're talking about keeping in pay. Like I remember I was in a band and in front of the band, I can play guitar, but not like anything that anyone really needs to hear. And because of that, it was actually slowing down my songwriting. My songwriting is fine, but I couldn't translate it better. Like, you know, anyway, that was way back when. And then like I everybody broke up everything, the whole thing. We had a big band and the whole thing went to, and I ended up performing with some other people that were very noteworthy. And I don't know if you've heard Canned Heat and all that stuff, but it was good back in the day. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, but I did some gigs on my own. And here I was with my guitar going ding, 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 ding. And my voice is carrying everything, right?
Yeah.
And like Nancy, you know, my mom's all this. And there goes, she's like, you're just doing ding, ding, ding on your guitar. Like, what the hell? And I'm like, dude, I needed to slow down and turn the page. Like, no. So ding, ding, ding. And it was like, it was lame. And I was like, I don't want to do karaoke, because you'd see singers just go there and sing karaoke. I'm like, no, I want to do originals. I can't play karaoke. Anyway, I've got to watch my language stuff. That's not who I am. So like, where was, and this wasn't there then. And I think it was at the beginning, but I was like, dude, that's geek stuff, right?
But yeah, but I have a friend. Yeah. I have a friend in Tucson who has like a Boss 808, which is like a looper station. And it's like 8 tracks, and she'll do entire sets that are in, it's just all built on vocal loops. And she'll create like percussion and bass lines from vocals that she then pitch shifts down. And then she'll add like vocal lines like on top of that that kind of provide a bed for her main vocals.
Isn't that the girl
to rest in?
Big Black Horse and the Cherry Tree. What was the song? The lady who did that.
Katie Tunstall. But no, this friend, her name is Jillian Bissett. She's amazing.
Okay. She sounds familiar. That's a familiar name to me. Yeah. But that Katie Tunstall, she did that, and that's how she ended up in front of millions of people doing it. And I think that's the thing. Solo artists should embrace this. So you can slow it, because that's the thing. like if you're doing an original, you may want to slow something down, and keeping beat was important. And when you're doing an original or if you're a singer-songwriter, you have that tendency, if you're just sitting with your guitar to, or piano or whatever, to like suddenly lose time, right? So when you have a beat, like you were saying, that can help you stay on track. But if you want to slow it down, you can, right? You can kind of go, hey, whoa, pony, I need to slow it down for a second, or can't, or does it have to stay in that zone?
It depends what system that you're working with. There's, you can definitely like change tempos, working in the software like Ableton. But you kind of generally have to know at where those tempo changes are going to be and have them programmed in ahead of time.
Oof.
And like with,
stay on your stuff.
Exactly.
Like recording you better stick to the music.
But for
what
an
a good
example,
exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a song called Nothing But Family, and like it kind of starts off with a little bit of a vocal line with a beat behind it that's like, ooh. And then later on in the song, I'm looping a phrase where I say, when we don't feel safe, gotta save each other when we don't feel safe. And then the next line, I add a harmony. So I say, when we don't feel safe, gotta save each other when we don't feel safe. And then on top of that, there's a line that says, you cannot take one of us out without taking both of us down. And so then by the time that we get to kind of the climax of the song, all of that is happening all on top of each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So
and,
you just
and then
have
I'm
to
singing the chorus
have
on
a clear
top of
head
that.
To do this. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to, you do have to be really clear.
So you're playing producer
about
in a way.
Where you're at. Yeah.
So when you did like your latest album, did that help you know how to record your album?
Absolutely. It was actually easier because instead of recording like the vocals and the keyboard or the guitar and then trying to figure out what the other layers were that were going to be added, the layers were already there. They were already built. And so it was recording vocals and keys or guitar into and along with what was already there, and then figuring out if there were extras that we wanted to add. Yeah. But it felt like being able to start out a lot further ahead.
Wow. So this is really interesting about where we're going, and it gives more independence to the writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does, because band drama happens. I mean, I remember with our band, we thought we were going to be like, we're like Fleetwood Mac. We'll make it through anything. Oh, yeah. Hell no, we didn't.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of interesting. So being in Hawaii Volcanoes, now taking those sounds, so you're able to use those as samples. So like it could be, I really would be curious if you just did a note in the lava tube and recorded it, what you could do with it. Like maybe it would
sure.
be a bass line,
like
or
what kind of
you know
echo
what I mean?
Might be there. Sure.
Yeah, like that could be used as like a bass sound, or
who
is
knows?
That how it would work? For this, or like
I think
if you...
it depends on what the natural sound ended up being like and what sort of associations that would inspire and what I was looking for a particular song, because typically I'll start out, I'll have a song written, and then I'll be like, what does this song need, what do I need to add to this for it to feel full and complete, and so I'll start to hear kind of possible ghost ideas of sounds. I'll be like, oh yeah, it would be great if there was a beat that kind of like a backbeat that kind of did this with a kick. Or it would be great if there was like a bass line that kind of did something like this. And then it's like trying to find the sound that I can plug in to that place. And so like adding those sounds to kind of my bank and just working through and seeing, does this work for this spot? Does, if I manipulated it in this way, could it work for this?
Wow. So sampling is so huge. And like, that's what we keep talking about. Like,
it's pretty overwhelming actually. And that's why what I do with it is,
how do you even categorize it? How do you go high pitch, low pitch? Like how do you categorize? This was the lava tube part 1, 3, 4, 5, because like one time I did this, you know, maybe I sang in a high, you know, C, and then next thing you know, it's like, you know, it's like high, high
right.
D, low
well,
C,
I think,
you know?
I think depending on the character of this, of the original sound, you know, if I sang into a lava tube and it made kind of like a deep resonant echo, you know, then I might like put it in the same bucket with like other sounds that make kind of a deep resonant echo with a pitch.
If you see, we geeked out.
Yep.
People are all going, what the heck are you talking about? But this is what you do at your shows, right? And you did that recently, right? You explained this at a performance at the park, at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. Tell us about that.
Once I'm performing, I have everything pretty much ready to go. Like the arrangements are already built. I'm not, I'm looping. I'm doing the vocal loops live, but everything
else
is already
built. Don't tell the
cops
that you're looping. Excuse me. Do not tell the police. She's looping.
I'm looping. Everything else is already built and pre-recorded and ready to go. I'll start and I'll kind of like trigger a scene or something that starts the song off, and then I'm kind of just playing along to that until I get to the place in the song where the looping starts. And depending on whether I'm also playing keys as this happens, the loops might already be like preset to like start recording at a certain time in the song, or I might be triggering them with my computer keyboard.
So you basically have to be on your game.
Super on my game. Like really? Four things at once on my game.
So there's no wine before the performance is what you're telling me.
I can have about half a glass.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay.
Half a glass is like the sweet spot. Any more than that and things go downhill.
Okay, we don't want the downhill. Because you could end up in a caldera, from what I heard.
Yeah, we don't need that.
No. But now, so tell me about like being in Hawaii, and you're in the amazing art house, right?
Oh, it's so beautiful. Yes.
You're the first person who told us about the electronic piano. That's amazing.
Probably because that's one of the things that like really makes this just a prime spot for me in particular.
Yeah, that's really beautiful that you have that. That's, I think that people have just talked about the piano, but I didn't realize like, ooh, it kind of feels like the Imagine like album, like, you know, and then you've got a view and then good coffee down the, now, are you enjoying the coffee? Because the last person I talked to didn't drink coffee. And I went, you went to Hawaii? Like what? Have you had the coffee?
I am enjoying the coffee. I actually have, I love coffee. Coffee, but I only drink decaf, but I've broken that while I'm here for the coffee. And I,
now she's climbing the lava tubes.
Yeah. But I found a variety of coffee from one of the local firms, Ka'u Coffee, that has like 40% less caffeine than average.
Oh, cool. So it's kind of like alcohol. Like you could get a balance of how much alcohol you want in wine. Like can't drink this. It's got a little bit too much. So we can balance this out. That's cool to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We never think of it that way. Hey, that's another learning. So going through where you've been all over, I know you've been touring as well, like going and doing, you know, performances, you have more. What has been the most inspirational thing for you in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park? Just out of I've got to write.
I think my favorite My favorite place is the estuary by Whittington Beach Park. That's been such an amazing place to just like, yes, oh my gosh. And all the fish and like, it's just such a beautiful spot. And I heard such a beautiful story about how it came to be there and be protected the other day.
Tell.
Well, it was bought by a developer who was going to build like luxury condos around the estuary. And I'm just going to tell the really short version of the story that Wendy at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park Kahuku Unit told me yesterday that it was bought by a developer. The community was like, no, this cannot happen. Like, you cannot build luxury condos. And the developer was like, to their credit, like very open to like, okay, if you don't want luxury condos, I'll sell the land. Like, I don't need to build luxury condos that badly. And so there was a community effort to convince the county to buy the land. And the county was like, that's not really our priority right now. Like, our buying land is not our priority. But if the county would put up like the first part of the money, then there was like city or state money and federal money that was available. And so there was like a videographer who spent a lot of time there filming footage of the estuary and the beach park. And he caught on film the moment that a monk seal swam into the estuary.
Ooh.
And so they like took that to a council meeting and showed it at the council meeting and like had everyone in tears, and the county was like, okay, we'll contribute the money.
Wow.
And so then the county ended up buying and preserving the land.
Wow. So the arts saved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The arts and community action, you know, and that's so activism, right? I mean, yes. National Showing parks up. Become national parks for, you know, it's public land, and they're only created because of public input. They don't get created out of like somebody going willy-nilly. Yeah,
it takes community. It takes the community to say, this is a special spot.
Yes, and the arts have played every role in our national park system, you know, all the way from Yellowstone to Hawaii, as you're just saying. Yeah. So that's amazing. That's amazing. So here you go. You're talking about something completely different. I mean, we've done so many interviews with artists, comedians, filmmakers, musicians in Hawaii, and you come in with a fresh perspective, just like each person does. And that's this beauty that I find amazing about this residency program. Mm-hmm. And for us, like, we traveled to national parks and we've done so many interviews like on Chaco, and then we went to Chaco, and it was like a whole different experience to experience a park after you've talked to artists that have been there.
Yeah.
Because you're experiencing the art through their, like, I've seen their art, we've put them on the website and magazines and talked to the artists. And then, so when we're there, like, I'm going, oh, I see where they did this and why and how. Oh, I get it. So it was like 20 realms of an experience versus, you know, going into a, it was just different. Like, it's special. Yeah. And so it for is. Music,
yeah.
what happens for you? How do you take your experience to the world as a musician and a songwriter?
That's an interesting question. I've had this relationship with music where it is really hard. It's really hard to feel this intense call to create in this way and not have any path really, or any clear or sure path to making it into a consistent livelihood. And so being in a position where I need another job. And then I have to balance the demands of the other job with somehow still having time and energy to create. Mm-hmm. And so I've had this is a long way of answering your question, but I've had multiple times in my life and in my creative process where I've kind of reached this decision to like intentionally give up. Like I can't do this. I can't make this into the livelihood that I want and need to make it into. So I'm just not going to do it anymore at all. And because I process things through songs, when I make a decision like that, and it's like very full of grief, I write a song about it. And then I feel like that song is maybe the best thing that I've written yet, and that it has to be shared with the world. And so then it like renews my passion for continuing to pursue music, the song that I wrote about deciding to give up on music. So I don't know if I've answered that question for myself of like how I, like, that is the question. How do we share music with the world? How do we find our audience as artists in a landscape that is so oversaturated with so many folks like trying to do this thing that they're called to do, and trying to like stand out in this incredibly this crowd that's just thick with so many folks doing it, and so many folks who have a passion for it, and like no, not a lot of like rhyme or reason toward what breaks through, and also kind of like this landscape where if you're savvy about like social media and social media marketing, then you have a much better chance than if you're just good at music, you know? And that's something that I really struggle with, but I'm trying to put energy there because I recognize that it's important. And it's a piece of the puzzle.
Oh, I've like 10,000 answers. One is, there's no answer. It's number one. Number two, I want to just go on the National Parks Arts Foundation. I think what they do, and that you're juried in, right? So when you apply, it's like from different perspectives, and it just comes with this is today. And so every time, like if you don't get accepted the next time, it just is, what's the pool of people? What's the atmosphere? It's like one of those magical things that happen. And so I always say, like, people just keep applying, just like what Lara has done, is keep applying.
Yeah.
Because you never know what your day is going to be, you know?
And if you look at like contests, like the NPR Tiny Desk contest, like the winners of that contest, the last like 2 or 3 years in a row, have been folks who have applied for 4 or 5 years running.
Exactly. And it's like, you're going to put your all into it, but it's actually that whole process of putting your all into it, which you do.
It helps
Lara.
You grow as an artist. Like when you make these applications and you make these videos and you try to do better than you did the last time, you know, it helps you grow as an artist, and it helps you see your own growth.
See, you just did one of those answers. you did it. But I also want to say, I think what sets NPAF apart, National Parks Arts Foundation, from other residencies, maybe, from what, you know, just doing a gazillion interviews over, I think it's 7, 8, 9 years, I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
Is that they allow, just like you said, I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Allow artists to come into the program, change their perspective. They have to do a pitch. Artists, as you apply, and again, no matter what you're doing in digital art, whatever it is, you apply, hey, this is my idea. And they all know by the time you get there, it's going to completely change or stay on track. They know you're going to do something later because, number one, it's good for your resume. Number two, this is an experience that's going to stick with you. It's going to come out somewhere, and it does. There's still, I mean, to the day, this day, there's artists that were the very first residency that are still creating from it. Still coming on, even on our podcast, you know. So they understand the value of art. Do you feel that freedom is helpful for you as a musician to be able to grow and actually just go breathe a breath of fresh air to be able to do?
Oh, absolutely. Because if you try to hold yourself too tightly to an original vision of what something is going to look like, often it just like stymies the creative process moving forward at all. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when Sufjan Stevens had announced that he was like going to make an album, like 50 albums, one about each state?
No.
And then, okay. So he was working, he released an album about Illinois, and I think he released an album that was about another state, and he had said that he was gonna like do this entire 50 album project where he made an album for each state in the United States. And then 2 or 3 years went by and no albums came out. And then the next album that he released was about his parents and his relationship with his parents. And it was like very, very touching and like very vulnerable. And I think, I'm not sure if he said it out loud. I think he may have in an interview that like that the 50 States project was just once he had like set that container for himself, it was just like too much. And it was like stopping the other creative work that wanted to come through him. And so,
and you're so on he Big had Glenn to abandon Radio. It. I think we understand you and what he is saying. Yes.
Yeah. And I felt so relieved as an artist when he said that, like when he kind of gave up that project, because I felt like if it was actually possible for an artist to do a project and stay focused on a project that dense and that all encompassing, that like I must be failing as an artist if I couldn't stay that focused. And and for him to like give that up was like, he's like, yeah, he's like beholden to the same creative spirits that the rest of us are. And he has to also just listen to what the call is.
That's like, it's like comedians have to go with a bomb. Like that's like bombing, right? And you're like, damn it. But you know, you have to do it and pick yourself up immediately with something.
Yeah.
And something must have happened to rock his world and go, well, this is more important. And that is what life is about, right? You can have all these dreams and goals and like, I'm going to do this. And then life comes in and goes, no, you're not.
Yeah. I mean, I came into this residency with this idea for an album, like focused on like anthems that are anti-capitalist. And some of that has come out, nothing fully formed while I'm here, but like the one fully formed song that has come out is like about that fear in love, you know, it's like another one of those. And I have to just let that be what comes. And so having the freedom to do that is, it's a really incredible gift. I also can't like the things from a nonprofit perspective. The things that the National Parks
Arts Foundation has to go through. See, you kept us on track. I just want to give you 10 points.
Has to go through to make these residencies happen for artists are heroic. Like, so heroic that all the different government sign-offs that they have to get and all of the things that they have to coordinate in order to make this possible for artists, and the fact that they offer artists a stipend on top of that so that like your living expenses and your travel expenses are covered and you don't have to like spend your entire savings in order to make this opportunity happen is just, it's so incredible. It's such an incredible thing that they're doing.
I agree. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And from what, you know, once people get home, it's interesting. We have these reunion radio shows. I hope you come on one next year. Every end of the year, like beginning of the next year, we do this. And we hear things that just keep coming. from this experience, and how it just the ripple effect is huge for artists. And that means it's huge for others. And so I'm really interested to hear what comes from you as you, I know you said you've got, when you get home, you have gigs lined up, right, for June? You want to tell people about it?
Yeah. So I'm going to be in Taos, New Mexico on June 9th at Taos Mesa Brewing, which is so exciting because I love that venue so much. I've always felt like so taken care of there as an artist. I've played there multiple times pre-pandemic when I was on the road a lot. And they had a fire last year, and they've been rebuilding since then. And so they're just opening back up and starting to host music.
Oh, wow. We were there during the pandemic.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful place.
Love Taos.
Yeah. Beautiful. So I'm really excited to be back there on June 9th. And then June 18th, I'll be in Tucson for a solo show. And then June 28th, I'll be also in Tucson for a full band show. And then July 1st, I'll be in Bisbee, Arizona for the first time at the Quarry.
Sweet. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Cool.
So everyone, you know, just keep up with Laura. Go to her website, and it is sharkheart.com. And that's shark with two Ks and heart with two Ts. Before you go, you got to tell us about Sharkheart.
Sure. Well, Sharkheart is the name that I started performing under when I started using samples and doing vocal looping, because I felt like I was taking my music in a little bit of a different direction. And I released a couple of albums under my own name. So if you search on like Spotify or Apple Music for Lara Ruggles, you'll find a whole different set of work than if you search for Sharkheart. But Sharkheart, the idea behind the name was sort of like that combination of fierceness and vulnerability that I feel like activism requires. And that I feel like also art requires, and
extreme
being
balance
able to bring together. Yeah. Being able to bring together like the art and the activism. And I think when I started writing songs and performing as Sharkheart, I was writing music, and I continue to, that was a lot more, pointed about like the commentary that I was making around like political issues and really how we treat each other. And so that's a thread that has continued to be present in the music that I've made since I started performing under this new name.
I think it's cool. I think, you know, we always do band names, but what about solo names, you know?
It's nice. You know? It's nice to have a name that isn't my own name, because being a musician, it can be so discouraging, and you have to absorb so many blows that feel so personal, but they're not. And performing under a different name, for me, somehow makes them feel less personal.
It's like an author does that. You know,
yeah,
here's my pen name, and that way they get to have, you know, if they want to write Exotica or Exotica, you know, sci-fi weird stuff, they can, and that's the biggest genre, by the way, that people buy. They want, I don't
sci-fi
know what's
weird
going on.
Stuff.
People are reading some interesting things. It's like the bodice rippers have gone to sci-fi bodice rippers, is all I'm saying, with other weird stuff like sprinkled in, and like that's what it is. So the people that are writing this like historical novels will go, let me write the sci-fi bodice ripper, and here's that name, you know, so I can do what I really need to do to make the money. I'm doing the bodice ripper for the money, and I'm doing this over here. But it's also, it is interesting. And also then there's a lot of people doing names just out of like, this is this project, this is that project. And I think going back to what you were saying in the beginning of our conversation is, you know, this whole thing where we have to be everything all the time. or we committed to this massive project. And Nancy and I do this with our business, and we're committed to what we do. But anytime I call any one of our people, and you know who you are, they go, oh God, what have you changed now? Well, because it is. Life is always changing. And if you stick yourself into a pigeonhole, like, that doesn't work. You can say, I'm in the arts. Why don't you just say that? Because one day she may be painting. Lara may be painting while she performs music. Who knows? And it's, you know, nothing
is
concrete.
If I did, it would probably all be horses, because that's the only thing that I ever good at drawing.
Hey, well, you're in the Southwest, right? You're in Salado land.
Yeah.
Oh, you make me a little homesick, even though we're talking about Hawaii and everything else. But, man.
Yeah, Tucson is an amazing place too. Tucson. It is. I grew up there. My family moved there while I was growing up, and I hated it because it was so different than Virginia, where I was born.
I thought you lived in Colorado too.
I did. I decided that I was going to move away from Arizona as soon as I possibly could. And before I graduated college, I moved to Colorado and I stayed there for almost a decade, and then rent blew up and I couldn't afford it anymore. So I came back to Tucson to like spend a couple months living with my parents and figure out what was next. And it turned out that coming back to Tucson after a long time away, I really fell in love with it. And I realized all of the things that make it special and that make it really unlike anywhere else on earth. But you don't want to live there because it's really, really hot in the summer. I'm just saying that so that like not too many people move and it doesn't become like Austin.
Asheville,
I really love
that
too.
Asheville is overgrowing too. Like certain spaces are overgrowing, and Tucson is like, you don't realize there's over a million people because it's so spread out in the foothills, you know, but and there's so much history, but it's diverse, culturally diverse, biology, you know, ecologically diverse, I should say.
Yeah,
and, you know, food and brews and wine. And I always tell people, like, you want to go to Arizona, you need to go there. Like that has it. I mean, and you have five seasons because of the monsoons, which just started already.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, right? We get excited. When you don't have a monsoon for a couple years, you get itchy. Like, you're just like, we need this to break now. Break it. Where did you live in Colorado?
I was back and forth between Netherland and Boulder and Denver.
Oh, nice, nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, in mountain land. And then you were in Virginia. Where were you in Virginia?
Richmond.
Ah, we just left that area. Yeah, we were in Lorton. Lorton, I think near there. I think we were near you. I think. Cool. All I know is I got lost everywhere, but it's all good. And
Because nothing is on a grid in Richmond. It's all, everything curves in a million different directions.
All I know is there's beltways and you can end up in DC if you take the wrong turn. Yeah. And no, shenanay. I'm not doing that again. No, I will. I will. That's crap. I will go back because it's beautiful. I mean, we were in the Chesapeake Bay at one point. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is beautiful. Yeah. Artist residency there, Tanya. Tanya Ortega, do you hear us? Residency in the Chesapeake. Beautiful. Even if you have to cross that beautiful. Stupid bridge. But it's beautiful. But Tanya, I want to give a shout out to her because she is an amazing photographer who just said, artists need more representation, and I'm doing this. And she stands up, and I know she's got an incredible board and incredible people around her to make this all happen. So shout out to everybody at National Parks Arts Foundation. Everyone, sharkheart.com. That's 2 K's, 2 T's. NationalParksArtsFoundation.org. And of course, we're here every first Friday doing this show. So keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. All the links are in the show notes. You can catch it there. So thank you so much. It has been a pleasure, Lara, to chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me. The pleasure is all mine.
We've got nothing but time. Time would have us believe. But he's a thief. Time will
take it all from me.